IATSE891 presents Apple Box Talks, the podcast where we get to talk to the very best artists, technicians, and interest holders that make up the BC entertainment industry. From prep to post and everything in between, we create worlds on screens of all sizes.
Welcome to Apple Box Talks. I'm Hillary.
And I'm Crystal, and today we're joined by two of our IATSE 891 costume department members, Carol Griffin and Sam Stroman.
With credits to their names like The Revenant, Star Trek Beyond, Peacemaker, and The Last of Us, Sam and Carol were also part of the team for the multi-award-winning series Shogun. So pull up an Apple Box and let's talk.
Welcome to the Apple Box, Carol and Sam. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
So we'll just dive right in. Where did both of you get your start? We'll begin with you, Carol.
I went to the, I think it's called the Toronto University, formerly Ryerson, and did their four-year fashion design program. And that was sort of my goal in life, was to be a fashion designer. And then I quickly learned it's not a really a profitable venture unless you've got big backing and are working offshore. So I kind of fell into film and theater through friends who were studying theater at U of T, and I helped out on a few projects in theater, and next thing I knew, I was a costume designer in theater. So I did that for about 4 years, and from that, I kind of ventured into doing rock videos and styling minor celebrities and Much Music, and just kind of started taking whatever job came my way, doing print work, commercials, film, and here I am 25 years later, still working in film and television.
And how did you get from the East Coast to the West Coast?
I had been out on the East Coast for about 17 years. So after graduating and then working in the industry out there, I had just had a child and we were looking to be kind of closer to family, and then just decided that it was time to make the move back to Vancouver. So I'm originally from Vancouver, so it was good to come home.
What about you, Sam?
Well, I was kind of raised here in this industry. So my dad is a Genie Op. He's been a Genie Op since I was about one. Some of my first memories are going to set to visit him on set of Neon Rider. So I think it was kind of inevitable in a way that I found my spot, found my place within the industry. He still works, Mike Stroman. And so after high school, I went to Emily Carr for photography. Didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I was interested in the arts. And then while I was in university, I started working as a PA. So just on the sides, days off, summers, stuff like that. It was kind of a easy part-time job-ish. And then, finished school, did that for a little bit longer, did a couple seasons of Smallville as a locations PA, and then kind of left, thought about what I wanted to do with my life and decided I wanted to get into costumes. I'd always loved sewing and creating, wanted to do fashion or be a costume designer or something like that. So went to BCC, got my fashion arts diploma, and then applied to the union. And here I am 10 years later.
You both have some pretty incredible credits to your name, and we have you both here together because we want to talk about Shogun. So obviously for anybody listening, Shogun's been a really important part of the last couple of years of motion picture here in BC. Can you talk about how you both got brought on board with that show?
Well, for me, my connection was with one of the producers, Aaron Smith. We have a bit of a history. We've done a number of projects together. And it was a funny kind of thing. She had called me to say, hey, I've got this project. I think you might be great for it. And gave me some details. And then the show that I was working on at the time, that designer came in and said, hey, do you know this producer? I just heard about this show in Vancouver. So it was sort of funny that I kind of knew about it, and then it all just kind of fell into place. And then they brought on a different designer and we connected right away. And the rest is sort of history. I just started, jumped on board and started putting a crew together. And a year and a half of my life was spent on Shogun.
For me, I came into the project about halfway through. So the production had originally hired some out-of-country textile artists to run the textile arts room. But they were only supposed to be there for a certain amount of time. And so their contract was kind of ending. And I had been working with my kind of work partner, Lanny Campbell, for a number of years by that point. And Carol contacted us and asked us to come on board. Took a little bit of convincing because it was such a big show and it was such a big undertaking. And we weren't really sure what to expect from it, but we knew the work would be interesting and great. And I hadn't actually had a chance to work with Carol yet. It was a good opportunity for that. We had been co-chairs together, so I had a relationship with her already, but it was our first time actually doing a show together, and it was great.
Can you explain for us what a textile artist does?
For sure. So textile artist or breakdown artist, you know, those terms are kind of interchangeable depending on the show. So we are the ones that do everything that a sewing machine can't do. We age the costumes, we dye the fabric, we dye clothing, we wash everything like crazy, we make stuff look old or worn or used, or add the blood or add fun textile embellishments. On Shogun, we're doing lots of screen printing and hand painting and stenciling to make these beautiful textiles. On other shows, it's more like making stuff look old and worn in a post-apocalyptic world. It's like really grimy, really dirty. Maybe stuff is covered in moss. Or if a character is getting shot up and they're covered in blood or goo or whatever it might be. So we do all of that kind of stuff.
And Carol, as the costume supervisor, I'm kind of the go-between between the designer and the money people. So I work really closely with the designer in taking their vision and making it a reality. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, by, you know, putting a team together, breaking down the script, figuring out like how many people it's going to take to do this, what kind of skills do we need, how much is it going to cost, what kind of space do we need, you know, how many trucks, all the logistics of what it's going to take to put it together, and doing all the hiring and labor tracking, budgeting, all the sort of unfun things that often a designer doesn't want to do. But then, you know, my main job is to protect the crew and make sure that the designer gets their vision told the way they want it and meeting the financial needs of the production. So it can be really fun and sometimes really challenging. And some days I wonder, how did I ever get here?
I feel that deeply.
Yes.
Costumes are such a visual feast of colors and detail, and just the way, Sam, you're explaining your job, like your canvas is the actual clothing.
Yeah.
And you truly are an artist with that clothing. And so I'd love to know, do you have any sort of anecdotal stories you could share with us? Did you have a favorite piece you worked on? Did you have something that was really challenging that you maybe applied a new technique, or anything that really stands out in your memory from the show?
It's a little tricky. There were so many things. One of the beautiful things about working on Shogun was that because we were working with so many beautiful limited textiles and making these really elaborate costumes, was that unlike most shows, we had only one of most of our main costumes. So normally we would have lots of multiples so that you'd have spares in case something happened, or you know, in case the stunt double needed to wear a different size or whatever it may be. But in this case, we were making like singles. So we got to really, really go overboard on the details for that, because you didn't have to worry about how hard it was going to be to replicate it. And then on top of that, we did have a fair amount of time to actually make the costumes and to spend time on doing all these amazing textile art things, which is great because you do run into the odd problem or mishap, or, you know, you're trying to figure out how to have something come out the right way. I often say that we're mostly problem solvers in breakdown. You know, the designer comes with an idea and then we have to figure out how to do it, you know, and how to make sure it stays so that it actually gets to camera. There was one Ichikake we made for Lady Ochiba where it's like this big purple, like, overdress, overcoat kind of thing, basically, that trains down onto the floor. And the idea from Carlos, our designer, was that it would have all these fan shapes appliqued all on top of it in all different fabrics. And so we spent weeks sampling, screen printing, stenciling different patterns for these fans to be cut out of. And then in the sewing room, they would apply them all. So they would lay them all out, sew them all on, and then we had to basically outline each fan shape in a gold foil so that you wouldn't be able to see the stitching. It would make it look like it's more one piece of fabric as opposed to a bunch of appliques. And then we were always adding all these different golds and reflective bits to everything to make it seem more regal and more ornate, and also to help reflect light, because a lot of the scenes are quite dark. And so to make sure that we could see all of the details of the garments. And so we would apply this like foil glue by hand around all these shapes. And then you have to let it dry and wait. There's so much waiting. And then you'd apply all this foil, this like gold foil. And then in this particular case, it didn't go so well off the get-go, which can happen, you know? I mean, that's just part of how it goes. You're doing special, intricate things, and sometimes you rush a little bit, or sometimes things just don't work out quite as planned. And so it just wasn't as clean as we needed it to be. And so it was like, okay, all hands on deck. Let's figure out, how do we fix this? How do we go back? We don't have another garment. We need to just figure it out. And we did, all hands on deck, everybody's ideas coming together, talking about it. And we all like stayed late, as you do sometimes. And we were able to cut down the excess and then reapply. And in the end, I think it was one of everybody's favorite costumes.
It was a stunning piece, like the intricacy, because you mentioned like light and dark was so important in that set. How did the learning process go of bringing the skills that you have as costumers from the motion picture industry into really authentic historical Japanese pieces, in blending those modern skills like you've talked about with foil and glue and with traditional Japanese clothing?
I mean, a lot of that comes down from the top for us. So it comes from our designer and our assistant designers, and they do a lot of that research to help guide us. So often Carlos would bring us an illustration about what he wanted the garment to look like, but he would also have some references that were from like extant pieces occasionally or from paintings. And then we would just kind of play within those realms, and then we would have, you know, artwork from the art department, and they would be checking to make sure that stuff is period appropriate, but also that we weren't dealing with like copyright infringements or anything like that as usual.
Yeah, if I can add to that, we did have a number of advisors in Japan. We had like some historians that we worked with during the 5-month prep period, where we were being sent photographs of existing garments that were in museums, and then paintings and illustrations. So a lot of Carlos's designs would be keyed off of that information, and often where we were trying to replicate something like, we want it to look like this and similar patterns, but we would add different colors depending on our characters. So it was really interesting because we did a super deep dive into like the history, and we had to learn a new language. Everything, like every garment is called something different, and then it's in Japanese. So as well as learning what, you know, what uchikake is and how do you spell it and how do you say it properly, it was really interesting and super exciting to learn all this new information and new skills that went along with it.
Mm-hmm. And Carol, do you have any standout memories of working on Shogun?
Oh my God. It's like, well, I mean, a lot of them were just problem solving, like Sam was just saying. It's like, you know, we were trying to achieve, you know, 1600 Japan in Vancouver in February in the rain, or, you know, in Port Moody or on the island, and just, you know, weather conditions. And in that time period, people didn't have like raincoats or rain boots. So they're wearing straw sandals, and we're trying to like figure out how to keep people warm and dry and achieve the look. So, you know, there's a lot of, I can think of many, many situations where we're like, oh my God, how are we going to do this? And somehow we would always manage to figure out a way how to make it look right, look period appropriate, but also taking care of our cast and our background and our crew. So
you point to something that's really common between all of our departments, and actually really across any motion picture work that's done. We're very versatile, problem solving.
And the result is having shows like this and Last of Us, which I know you've worked on as well, come here to this province to shoot. And a lot of the times it's our members that are coming up with these new techniques or new equipment and that sort of thing. Can you describe what it was like to work on The Last of Us and if there was anything on that show that was unique?
That was a huge challenge for me, that show. I mean, I initially only came in to help for a few weeks and ended up staying for the whole show.
Thank goodness.
So thank you. Yeah, so I kind of jumped in, like, I think I came on like a week before they went to camera. So I was really, really far behind, but there was already a really strong crew in place and a lot of them I had worked with on Shogun. So that was really helpful. And I mean, I think, you know, it was a tough show because the volume was so big. And, you know, Sam was saying how in Shogun we were doing singles because that was it. You get one. And on a show like The Last of Us, it's major stunt action. And, you know, it's like the post-apocalyptic world. So you're trying to create, you know, when the virus came in, the world stopped in, I'm going to get the date wrong.
2006.
So you had to, you know, we need multiples of everything, but, you know, we couldn't make everything. So you're going to stores and you have to buy things that look like they could be very generic and not really looking, you know, like the right time period. And then volume. So everybody needed multiples of like 8 to 10. And then in a scene, you've got like an ensemble cast of like 10, and then you've got 100 infected, and then you've got, you know, Fedra, and you've got uniforms. And sometimes we'd have like, you know, 800 people in an episode, you know, background and cast. So it was super challenging of just having enough crew, having enough hours in the day, getting decisions made, putting everything through the process, you know, fittings, alterations, breakdown, and then getting it to set on time, having enough people to take care of it all. But we did it.
That is a massive amount of coordination. And Sam, I see you smiling as Carol is talking. Did that bring something back to your memory?
Yeah, I mean, The Last of Us, it's a bit more recent in my memory also, so it's a little bit more fresh. But it was a massive undertaking. The Last of Us was huge. I mean, Shogun was massive and our costume crew was so much larger.
Mm-hmm. I think we had, on average for Shogun, we were about running 85. And then on bigger days, we were up to about 110. And Last of Us, we were more in the 60s,
yeah,
low 60s.
Yeah, but in like breakdown specifically, like the breakdown world was so much larger on The Last of Us. I think at our height, we had 21 breakdown artists working, whereas Shogun, we had a solid 12 at any time, which 12 is still a large breakdown room. So, you know, 20 plus is massive. And they were both very special and very fun to work on and very creative, but in like completely wildly different ways. The Last of Us was hard for its speed, the amount, and a completely different kind of creative. You know, you're dealing with things looking old, things looking vintage, things looking crazy, and then you have the infected, and that's just a whole other world of like a monster creation, basically. And we worked very closely with makeup effects to help create our infected looks, and that was really a really fun collaboration. It's always really nice when we actually get to work with the other departments really hands-on.
I wanted to go back to Shogun a little. We have the opportunity to talk with Helen Jarvis a little bit about some of the design that went into that. And unlike something like The Last of Us, you've also got with Shogun all of the headwear. There's a lot of helmets, there's a lot of hats, there's a lot of pieces. How does that impact the work in the costume department?
It just adds another element. It's just another piece that we have to research, acquire, fit, break down, maintain on set. So, yeah, I mean, you know, we had everything from like peasant hats to the armor helmets. Some of them were super elaborate, like Toranagas, and, you know, we have ones with giant horns and crescent moons. And so, you know, those are all really interesting to have made. Most of the armor we had made in China. And so we were dealing with a contractor that I've worked with before who set up a factory in China. And so we were like sending illustrations, and then he would do a mock-up, and then they'd send us various versions. We'd try things, and he would take pictures. And so it was a lot of, you know, back and forth. And we were still on the tail end of COVID. So it was, you know, a lot of Zoom meetings, and, you know, he wasn't allowed to go into the factory on some days. So he's trying to like film through a window. And it was pretty crazy to get that all accomplished.
I mean, you mentioned Taranaga's costumes and his standout across, like throughout the series, of the level of ornate detail and just beauty in such pieces. What was it like working with Hiroyuki Sanada? He's movie royalty.
Yes. But, you know, I mean, we've all worked in this industry for years. You know, we're all human. And he was a very kind man. He was also one of the producers. So he always had a much more open mind, I think, in conversation. And yeah, he was very pleasant in fittings. He was really kind on set. So everybody had positive things to say. Absolutely.
Do you have anything you want to add on that one, Sam?
I'm in the workshop. I don't really come in contact with the actors very often.
That actually brings us to a question that we normally ask folks that are on the floor and in different areas of the floor, let's just say. What is a day in the life of a person that does your job?
Well, we work in the workshop. So like I've mentioned, we work with a team. So typically we have a little kind of breakdown department within the costume department. So we have our own workspace. And then as a key, I usually have a co-key that works with me. So on Shogun, it was Lanny Campbell. And so we kind of simultaneously together run the workshop. So we usually have like a morning meeting with our crew, talk about what we have to get done that day, what's coming in, what we're anticipating for the week, and just kind of make sure everybody's on the same page. I really think of this job as like major teamwork kind of job, and I like to have everybody have an idea of what's going on. And then kind of varies, but we work quite closely with the assistant designers for what's coming in for workload and also with the sewing room. So typically breakdown is one of the last steps before it goes to set. So you have like, you know, shoppers and everybody. And if on a show like Shogun, where everything's getting made, everything spends a long time in the sewing room. And then it comes to us for final touches and stuff like that. On Shogun, we had the added layer where we were printing the fabrics. So there'd be a lot of back and forth between the sewing room. And so the ACDs would really help us coordinate what's where, what's coming to us when we have to get things done, all of that. So a lot of back and forth with them. And then at least once a day, we'd meet with our designer to have Carlos take a look at where we're at, get feedback on our samples, and give us the okay to go ahead and do it.
Just for my own edification, when you say printing the fabric, what is that?
Oh, fair enough. So, I mean, we use a lot of different techniques, but basically for Shogun, like we would have either just straight yardage, so just like raw fabric that would come to us, or in many cases, the sewing room would pre-cut stuff. So if they were making a kosode, which is basically a kimono, they would kind of pre-cut the pieces that would make up, you know, the front panels, the back panels, and the sleeves, so that we knew what was where. And then in collaboration with the designer and the ACDs, it would get decided on like what we're doing to it. And so say, for instance, there's one that we made that has like little bamboo prints all over it. So it's just a plain piece of silk. There's no print on it or anything. And then maybe we would dye it to a different color, specific color that's already chosen. And then we would hand print these little like bamboo motifs onto it. So typically we would either screen print it. So we make screens in-house and screen print it just kind of like you would like a t-shirt, but, you know, all over the place. And we'd also did a lot of stenciling. So we have a Cricut machine, which is like a craft machine that you can buy at Michael's that cuts vinyl and can cut stickers. And so we would often cut out little stencils for ourselves, place them all over the garment, get the approval that the pattern looks appropriate, that the spacing is good. And then by hand, we would paint in different colors into them.
So both of you have won awards for this work that you have done, as well as many other awards throughout your careers. Can you tell us a little bit about your Shogun-related hardware?
Well, I was fortunate enough to win an Emmy for Outstanding Period Costume Design for Shogun, and it's pretty cool. It's
heavy.
It's heavy. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, you're working on a show and you think, is this the one, you know, like, you know, we've all worked on really things that we thought were spectacular and no one else thought they were. But this was one where you're kind of like every day thinking, this is something special, like we're really doing something great here. And I remember one day we were shooting this particular episode, Ladies of the
Willow.
And the on-set team had sent me photos, which they usually do throughout the day so that we can see what's going on. And I remember looking at them and walking into our designer's office and said, Carlos, you know, have you seen the photos from set today? And he's like, oh, yeah, they're really great. And I said, I don't know, but I think, like, we might get an Emmy nomination. And he's like, no. And I'm like, no, like, look at this work. Like, it was so, just so spectacular, so beautiful in the setting, on set. And it was one of those moments where I thought, maybe. But then, you know, you sort of put it out of your mind and you get back to work. And then when we got the nomination, it was really wonderful because it is such a collaborative effort. And none of that could have been possible without the entire team. Like, we have so many cutters and, you know, people doing embroidery and Sam's team, hand painting. I was looking at a video earlier today of the Casode where there was like the Mariko's with the white flowers.
With the cranes.
Oh,
that one's beautiful.
And you guys were going in and hand painting little red flowers, like thousands of them. And it's like the fabric was already beautiful to begin with, but then they did this little extra bit. And that was something that we had the ability to do because we were only making one ofs most of the time, and we had the time to do it properly. And it just, those little extra details really, I think, elevated the visuals of the show to make it, you know, Emmy worthy and so many other nominations and awards and accolades that it received because we all did take that extra time, do the proper research, get the fabrics from Japan, you know, handprint, create our own, make it all original. And I think that's what makes the difference. So I'm proud of everybody involved. It was, like I said, it was a huge team effort.
Yeah, and just in talking to other folks that worked on the show, that sentiment of really being invested and committed and putting everything into it, you can see that across so many different departments. And it shows in their historic amount of Emmys, right? Mm-hmm. So,
For some of our listeners, Sam, you won a CAFCAD for your work on Shogun.
Yes, we did. Yeah, so we won a CAFCAD for Excellence in Crafts Textile Arts.
For folks listening, what is CAFCAD? What does that stand for?
So CAFCAD is the Canadian Alliance for Film and Television Costumers and Designers.
Awesome. Thank you. It's a long one.
You didn't know you were going to get quizzed today, right?
No. Yeah, so they're an organization based mostly out of Toronto, but they are nationwide to help support Canadian costumers and designers across the country and the amazing work that we do. So they run a pretty fantastic organization, and they've been hosting an awards show annually since 2017? 2018?
Yeah, about that.
Something. I went to the first one. I
yes,
should remember.
We went to the first one.
Yes, yeah. You were there. So I've been a couple times. This is miraculously mine and Lanny's third win. This was pretty special because it was really special work that we did. Definitely work that I'm really proud of. I'm really proud of our team for making such beautiful things and being so creative. And it was just really special because most shows you don't get to be that creative. You know, it's like sometimes we're just making stuff dirty day in, day out for months. And this was like actually textile arts, which was part of why we did use the term key textile artists as opposed to breakdown. I mean, it's the same job essentially, but because our focus was so much more textile based, it seemed more appropriate.
And so where did you source the fabrics? Where did you source for the authenticity that you spoke about earlier?
We were getting fabrics from Japan. We got probably the majority of them from there. We had two buyers there that were sending us rolls of fabric on a weekly basis. And we were also getting fabrics from Thailand and from China. I think we got a bit from India. We were getting stuff from, you know, local suppliers where we could, also from LA. So we were sourcing from like all over the world. We built all our cast costumes in-house in Vancouver. And then we had all our armor, as I mentioned earlier, made in China. We had a lot of the background and villager costumes made in Thailand. And then we had, I think, probably 10 different local contractors within the Lower Mainland that we would sort of subcontract smaller production runs out to. So, we had hundreds of people working. And, so we would just like source for whatever, you know, wherever we could for whatever we needed. And then what we didn't make, we did some rental from costume houses in Japan. So we're renting also authentic pieces. So yeah, but the majority we built, and that's why it looks so amazing. Mm-hmm.
What was, and it might be the purple piece that you were talking about earlier, what was the most expensive or extravagant piece?
Toranaga?
Probably Toranaga. Yeah, I mean, all of his pieces were so intricate, layers and layers. But also a lot of the women, and if you look at the images, they wear five different layers. And as one of the producers would always say when I'd submit budgets of like, are they all wearing the five-layer cake again? And it's like, well, yes, because that's period appropriate. But yeah, so even though, you know, you don't even see the layers, obviously we did some film cheats in there occasionally, but often they were like five layers of clothing. And that all gets very expensive. Like the rolls come in one roll that's enough to make one garment. So, you know, and they could cost anywhere from $200 to $1,000 a roll. So, you know, if you need five of those, then, you know, then you're still talking footwear and then you're talking embellishing and you're not even including the labor of what it takes to build it and paint it. And so some of them were quite expensive. I've never really did like a cost analysis of each one because there was never any time. But I would say I do recall that the Toranaga armor was probably the most expensive that we had made in China. Yeah.
I'm just thinking of, as a mom of an 8-year-old, the sheer washing and ironing of one layer, just the amount of time. How long did it take to dress a cast in the morning?
Oh, a very long time. Yeah, we would need two people on set to dress one person. So I think, you know, in the beginning it was very challenging, but we got better and better. We had a few dressers from Japan, and then we also had anybody who had kimono experience within our local. And then we brought in some permittees who also helped with that. And we would have two people per actor, and I'd say in the beginning, it was probably taking about half an hour to dress one person. And then they'd have to go through hair makeup, which was also very intricate as well. And they were getting, you know, bald pates, and they were getting, you know, certain wigs. And so the turnaround in the morning took a really long time. And, you know, we would have maybe like 10 people getting ready at once. So we would have a huge costume team in the morning and getting all the cast ready, trying to stagger them, getting them all through the works, getting on set on time. And then not to mention over in the background tents where we're getting another, you know, 50 or 100 people ready. So, yeah, we had, four and a half, five-hour pre-calls sometimes.
Wow.
So
with a lot of traditional kimono, there's a lot of ritual connected to the layers in the styles. Like, how did you balance honoring that with the time pressure and the time crunch of being like ready to go to camera?
Well, we had to come up with some film cheats, you know? So like I was saying, you know, maybe if someone was wearing an outfit that had five layers, maybe two or three of those layers were sewn on, or it was a different piece that came in, like a shawl that would go on first that would replicate the first three layers, and then the last two layers would go on. So, and then as far as like tying the OB, we'd have like have them pre-tied, and then there would be like hooks in the back, and then you know, we'd sway the fabric over and tack it so you wouldn't see it. So, you know, we're an inventive bunch, and you know, you just have to, because there just isn't the time. And we had just the volume of dressers. We just had to bring in, you know, 20 dressers every morning. That's what it takes.
I mean, anyone who's listened to this podcast before knows when someone has Star Trek in their credits. I'm going to ask about it. So, Sam, you worked on Star Trek Beyond?
Yes.
Yeah? What was that experience like? Because you basically couldn't order something more different than Shogun to be working on the Starship Enterprise.
Oh, totally. Yeah, so that was back in 2015. That was the year I joined the union, actually. It was a pretty amazing opportunity and really exciting experience to be on a Star Trek show, like right out of the gates. It was my first time working with Lanny Campbell. So we developed a nice long working career together since then. But yeah, it was pretty amazing. I was super new and learning a lot. And there were some really fantastic people on that show that I still work with a lot today. And they were all really willing to teach me new things. And it was pretty exciting. I mean, a lot of what I was doing, especially as like a new breakdown artist, was pretty basic stuff, just making stuff look a little dusty, a little dirty, you know. But every now and then you get a little challenge. And they're like, oh, you seem like you know what you're doing. Maybe you can try to fix this weird crotch seam that all the texture came off of, you know. So, but pretty amazing fabrics. And it was pretty cool. We did get to go to set a few times. I mean, that's something that I don't always do working in breakdown. Like, we are in the workshop. Now that I'm keying, I do go to set a little bit more to check up on stuff and make sure things are, you know, playing properly and all of that. But I did get to go to, like, the quarry set out in Maple Ridge for that, which was pretty great with all the blue rocks.
Yes.
And we had all this weird testing that we did with, like, blue dust to make everybody look dusty from the blue rocks. And it was pretty crazy. Definitely a lot of challenges, some weird costumes.
Definitely.
The swarm was hard.
Of course, understandably so. And we often ask people, even if they're here to talk about a specific show, if they have a pet favorite. And you mentioned Peacemaker when we were talking before the interview. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Sure. Yeah. Peacemaker was super fun to work on. I was really hoping it would come back here for its season two. But alas, maybe season three. Fingers crossed. But it was, yeah, super, super fun, crazy production to work on. Super suits are always really fun and challenging. We had some that were made in LA, and we also, I mean, Peacemaker's suit was made in-house. So we worked pretty tightly with the sewing room on that one to help assist them in any way. Like, Peacemaker has these little metal, like, blocks on his shoulders, basically. And so we helped the sewing room, like, figure out a way to attach those and cut them out. And we were always painting his gloves and stuff, but a lot of really great, fun blood work on that show, and goo, and like really fun, messy things. Yeah, and James Gunn as director was pretty, I don't know, pretty fun, pretty awesome to work with. He would send out playlists for each episode so that we could listen to the playlist for the episode to get in the mood for the episode. And I just loved that so much. And he was really nicely hands-on, but very respectful of people's jobs and the input that they would have based on their own experiences. So it just felt very collaborative.
It's nice when that happens. Mm-hmm. It's not always that way.
Yeah.
And Carol, you worked on The Revenant.
I did, yes.
Can you talk to us a little bit about what that was like for you?
Revenant stories. It was a pretty wild experience. I mean, we initially started in Vancouver and did all the prep, and that was, you know, I don't know, 4 or 5 months of prep. And it was a challenging director. He was very, you know, knew what he wanted, which is good sometimes if you can achieve it. And so it was, you know, trying to hit that mark all the time, but which we did fairly well, I think, in the costume department. And then we were breaking for Christmas, and then they decided, oh, we're going to go move to Calgary, and we're going to shoot in Calgary. So that was a bit of a what moment for most people, because, you know, we've got families, we've got lives. So it was a bit of a surprise to have to pack up and go to shoot in Calgary in January is, yeah, not really a lot of fun.
No.
But, I mean, it was super fun and super challenging, and every day was like you didn't know what to expect because schedule, what's a schedule? A call sheet? Doesn't matter. You go to bed thinking you're going to shoot something when you wake up. We're doing something completely different, and I count how many times on a Sunday where you've got the day off and you're maybe at the pool or having lunch with someone, and then you get a call of, oh, we've changed what we're shooting on Monday. You got to call everybody in, had to bring everybody back to the shop, offload the trucks, reload for a different scene, drive out to, you know, some small town and fit 200 people. I think, I don't know, there's one particular scene where we refit background, I think, four times to finally shoot the scene, which I don't even know if we ever ended up doing, but it was sort of crazy and chaotic, but also a lot of fun too, because it was kind of, you know, when you're on a road show, everybody kind of bonds together and they become your family even more so than when you're working in town. So it was, you know, and it looked amazing. I mean, you know, shooting in Alberta on a mountainside, and we didn't use any, you know, typical lighting. So we'd rehearse all day long and then wait for magic hour. And then we would actually film for 45 minutes. Mm. And then that's it. Wrap. Let's come back and do it tomorrow. So, yeah, there was a lot of interesting challenges on that show.
So we'll circle back to Shogun here. Can you talk to us about how the status of the characters was reflected in their costumes? Can you speak to that?
Yes. Well, we approached it by fabric and color. So, you know, like the villagers were all wearing indigo dyes and cottons, and, you know, they didn't have a lot of embellishment in their costumes. And then when you go into like the castles and Osaka and Edo, then they're moving into like bolder patterns. So that's differentiating them. And then when we moved into like the castles, that's where you've got the lords and they're the higher elevated status. So they've got like the more layers in their clothing, the more beautiful fabrics, the more intense colors and embroidery, the hand painting, gold foilings. So sort of broken up that way as to their level of status of who falls who on the hierarchy.
From the first couple of episodes, particularly the thread of the story about the influence of Catholicism clashing with feudal Japan, there were some costume choices, like with Lady Mariko with her cross that she was wearing, and then like a couple of other, like the priest, and how you chose the pieces that kind of highlighted those differences, like in adornments, for example. Was that something that you guys got to play into?
The priests, they looked a certain way because that's the historical accuracy of it. And Lady Mariko's, like, she started more subdued because, you know, her life for her didn't have a lot of meaning. Mm-hmm. And she only, you know, gravitated to the church, you know, to give her life meaning. But then as she met Blackthorne and then things started to develop, then her costume arc actually changes. And then her clothes, if you watch all 10 episodes, she starts in that, you know, that light blue that you talked about. And then the more we see her, then her clothes become much more
ornate
and colorful. And, you know, because she was always referred to the leafless branch, that she was a leafless branch. And then as she grows in herself and her attraction to Blackthorne, you know, her clothes become much more representing that, her blossoming, I guess.
Yeah, there's a big shift in the simplicity to the ornate.
Yes, yeah.
Interesting.
Is there, and this question is for both of you, is there any piece of advice you would give someone who is interested in getting into your department specifically?
I mean, when I started, I came from a background as a STEM. We had some artistic training and background and interest. I think that's very important. I think having a basic sewing skill is also important. Whether you want to be a cutter or sewer is irrelevant. Like, you need to know garment construction and how things work. So I always recommend some training, you know, a year or two of training, and then try to get experience, like volunteer a local theater company or, you know, a short film or anybody who will give you an opportunity to gain some experience, because you need to have the skill to be able to figure things out yourself and be a self-starter and collaborate. And I know when I kind of fell into it, I didn't know anything about film or television, but I knew, you know, how to draw and I knew how to sew and I had some skills that helped me get to where I was going. So I think, you know, the more experience you can get, and when you're not being paid and if you make mistakes, people are a little bit more lenient than they would be if you're on a union show and you start messing up. So I always tell people, try to get as much experience as you can before you try to join a union. Like, you need to figure things out. And the smaller the projects and the smaller the crew, the better, because you're not on a team of 20. You might be part of a team of three. So you're doing, you know, the shopping and you're doing the fittings and you're doing the alterations and the breakdown. So you're doing everything. So the more experience you can get in all of those areas will serve you better, that when you do come onto a bigger union show, you are more versatile. You know, me as a department head says, hey, you know, I hear you can do breakdown. I'm going to pull you off hanging clothes and put you in breakdown, and you can do that. It makes you more employable. It makes you more versatile, and it opens up a lot more opportunities.
I think adding to that, yeah, I think being, especially for like a new member, like, be flexible, you know, ask questions. Back to the point of, like, you know, making mistakes. We all make mistakes. That happens. Be honest about it and continue to ask questions and continue to learn all the way through. You know, I mean, nobody's expecting you to know everything when you're new or at any point, really. So if you can ask questions and pay attention and make sure that you are doing things the way that people are expecting you to do them and not having an ego about it. Yeah, I think flexibility is a big point, and just communication in general.
Do you watch back the shows that you work on and feel that sense of pride, like looking at these beautiful pieces?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been sort of, you know, when you're scanning, looking for something to watch, and then now Shogun is running on regular FX. So I, oh, and I stop and I'll watch it and I'll be like, oh my God, look at that. That is so good. And also, like I said, we're doing this this talk at Cap University in a couple of weeks. So I've been pulling up some of the images that I have on my phone, on my computer, and be like, wow, that's really great. Like, yeah, I think we're all very proud of the work. It really was something special. And, you know, that's why I got into costuming. I don't want to go shopping. I want to build. And that's what, you know, Shogun allowed us. And every opportunity I get to do a build show is like, that's it for me. Gets me out of bed in the morning, makes me really happy.
Nice.
And you pulled off something incredible. We recently were speaking with production about the costumes, and where a lot of other movies, they're preserved forever on the screen, but the Shogun costumes got their own tour.
Yeah.
Like, not just the talent, your costumes that you made got a tour.
Yes.
Like, that's got to be pretty special to hold on to.
Yeah. Is that the one in Japan?
They told us that they've traveled both in the US and now in Japan as well, because, yeah, we were asking where they were because we were hoping to see some of them, and they said, nope, they're all on tour. So
maybe if season two goes up and running, we'll invite you over.
Oh, that would be amazing.
We would be there in a hut.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I want to thank you both for coming in and sharing your experience today. It's so valuable for people to hear and get to know you as, you know, world-class crew in this province, but just really sharing your experience. We're so grateful for that.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Apple Box Talks is an IATSE 891 production and is recorded on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Coquitlam peoples. The podcast is hosted by Business Representative Crystal Bronworth and Assistant Business Representative Hilary Bergshaw, and produced by Quentin Benetti. For more episodes, check out ourwork.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on the Apple Box.